Hey, everybody, it's Kai Rizdahl.
And I am Molly Wood, and welcome to Make Me Smart, where we are joined, as always, by all of you, because none of us is as smart as all of us.
We are going to do Houston and Harvey and the rest of Texas and all that is going on down there this week, because really that is the story of the week, I do believe. So we're taping this Tuesday morning-ish LA time, 10:34 and 44 seconds right now.
Never
the rain is still
Kai.
Falling in Houston. Well, you know what? I like to be precise. I like to be precise.
I know.
Anyway, so we're taping now. Houston is still basically underwater. Lots of rain. Rescues all over the place.
Yeah, it is just intense. According to the AP, more than 17,000 people are seeking refuge in Texas shelters. That number is probably only going to grow. Harvey is expected to circle back, as you will probably know by the time you hear this on Wednesday. Engineers have actually released water from some overflowing reservoirs to relieve pressure on the dams. They are essentially intentionally flooding some suburbs in order to save others. And some homes will probably be flooded for up to a month. Basically, a huge disaster.
So wait, when you say it never gets old, that means it's gotten old, right?
You're still thinking about that?
Okay, well,
just taking a minute.
All right.
Was that a dig?
I won't do it
was
anymore.
Is that shade?
I won't do it anymore. President Trump.
No, I like it. No, I'm sincere.
President Trump is in Corpus Christi today. I think he's going to Austin as well, and then he's coming back this coming weekend. But we're going to talk about what's going on the ground, literally on the ground, with a guy by the name of Sam Brody. He is a professor of marine sciences and urban planning at Texas A&M University at Galveston. I talked to him on Marketplace last year about, I guess it was the tax day storm in 2016. And we got him back on the phone because, holy cow, this stuff is interesting. He is in Galveston now. Sam, where are you? What's the situation in Galveston?
Well, I'm actually in Houston, stuck in my home.
Uh-huh.
For about 3 days, we've been stuck in the home. We did not get any home flooding, but so many people around us have, and we feel grateful that we still had power, and our biggest worry is trying to contain our teenage boys from eating all of the snacks.
I bet. You've still got power?
We still have power. Uh-huh. Again, we had rising waters that got uncomfortably close, but nothing in the home. And my wife can tell you that I spent so much time. We just moved up here about 4 months ago. I spent so much time researching which home would be the safest from floods, because
wow,
that's what I do.
Yeah.
And so if it got close to us, that means hundreds of thousands of homes weren't so lucky.
Yeah. Talk to me about Houston then for a second, would you? Because Houston is special for many reasons, but flooding is one of them.
Yeah, so the first thing to consider is the physical environment. Houston's built on a low-lying coastal plain with very little topographic relief. The soils are clay-based, which means they don't drain very well, say, compared to Miami, which is blessed with sandy soils. And then on top of that, it's susceptible to heavy rainfall events and also inundation from the sea with wave-based and surge-based induced flooding. And so you take that flood-prone palette, and on top of it, you place 6 million people and all the buildings and rooftops and roadways that come along with it. You're setting yourself up as a recipe for disaster. And that's what we got the last couple of days.
When we talked on Marketplace last year, you gave me a formula about the impact of a square meter of concrete or something.
Right. So we look at the impacts of the built environment on not flooding, but flood loss. And our original study, we showed that on average, about a square meter of pavement in the Houston region increased flood damage by about $4,000.
Hmm.
And since our talk, you inspired me. We've done additional research to look at not just the amount of pavement, but its configuration and intensity across these landscapes. And what we found was the sprawling, low-density, residential type of development is the least flood-resilient. This low-intensity pattern significantly increases flood losses, property losses, damage from floods. And then we looked around the entire Gulf Coast at about 150 counties and parishes, and we found that Harris County, Houston, has the largest quantity of this low-intensity, sprawling development patterns than any other jurisdiction along the Gulf Coast.
Is there a, you know, there's a piece in Newsweek this week suggesting that some of this is a regulation question. Is part of that because that kind of building has been allowed unchecked? I know that's not totally your territory, but...
Yeah, well, as a planner, that's kind of the territory we enter. Mm-hmm. I don't like to think of it as much as regulation, as more so as smart development. So thinking about, okay, where are we going to put this new subdivision? What are its characteristics? And maybe even more importantly, how is that going to impact downstream flooding? So a lot of neighborhoods in Houston, flooding is exacerbated, or flood loss is exacerbated by what's happening upstream. And so really not taking a comprehensive regional look at our development patterns. And yeah, there are other cities across the United States that have more policies and regulations and ordinances to try to focus development in places that are least flood prone. And also think about the big picture, the big system of, okay, if we put in a parking lot in this location, what does that mean from a cumulative perspective? And what does it mean for flood losses potentially downstream?
So now, but now this, we're in this situation already, like there's no sort of retroactive answer.
Yeah.
Right. Or is there further planning? I guess the question is sort of what happens now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Because more storms like this are coming, right?
They're coming. And it's not, you know, the next great storm may be surge based. Maybe it's not rainfall based. And sometimes you get them both at once. And that's a real recipe for disaster. You know, we look at the cost of doing nothing. So one of the things we do most recently, and we're just coming out with these results, is we train computers to predict where development's going to occur in the future, given the existing scenarios. So if we do nothing and business as usual, we can literally, on a map, identify where future development's going to occur. And it's the same technology. Sorry.
Oh, that's all right. Sorry. Everybody's got dogs.
Yeah, that happens to me all the time on the show.
He just saw a human for the first time in 3 days.
Oh, man.
Oh.
Think about that.
Anyway, so it's the same kind of technology as self-driving cars. We're using artificial intelligence to train computers to map future development, which is one of my passions. And by doing that, we can literally see how the development in Houston is going to spread out into the future into more flood-prone areas. And then we can start to look at, okay, if we do nothing to change what's happening, what are the impacts potentially going to be if we get another Harvey or another Hurricane Ike? And then we can think about, okay, what can we change to and see on in our models and on a map to reduce the impact? I'd say we're planning because I get booze, but spatially targeted development, we're finding that, you know, you can have pavement, but if you have open space embedded into that neighborhood, you're better off than if you have nothing but parking lots and no trees and nothing to absorb the water.
Which seems so common sense.
I know, right? Well, it costs more money.
Yeah. And you sacrifice money, right? If you have green space, then you're not putting a house on it and you're not making the rent from the house.
That's exactly it. And in Texas, there's no state income tax. Yeah. So the primary source of revenue is property tax. I have all these arguments with local officials that, you know, well, you need to protect this area. Well, we don't want to take that out of the tax rolls. I'm like, well, this house is flooded 3 times. Yeah. It's not productive. Hmm. And any threat to property tax revenue is met with fear and protest, even if it's not even a realistic threat.
Well, that's intense.
Yeah, welcome to my world.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I mean, you sound really tired. Are you hopeful? I mean, I know you're kind of in the middle of it right now, and a lot of people are in the middle of much worse, but...
I've been sitting around for 2 days giving interviews, and it's exhausting, and I'm overwhelmed just trying to figure out who to respond to.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I see Kai Rizdal, that's a yes.
Oh, bless.
Yeah, I think it's just I've been working on these issues for, 15 years now. I teach, I write all these scientific articles, I speak, you name it, I do it. And we've been warning about, we're setting ourselves up for a real crisis here, and then it happens. I think that it takes an emotional toll. And that's not to say that, we could have prevented any impact with this storm. And this is ginormous amounts of rainfall over a huge geographic scope. So to say we could have prevented it, there's no way. But maybe we could have had the impact be less severe by making different decisions after the last great rainfall event, which was 2001, Tropical Storm Allison. And we've come a long way, and a lot have been done, but I think it's time for a real shift in our thinking and fundamental approach to flood risk reduction and flood management overall. Are we really making the investments in our communities? Are we really setting the correct risk standards compared to other cities around the world? And what do we do moving forward?
Sam, thank you so much. I hope you remain dry and comfortable and get some rest.
Yeah, that's what I need.
Man.
I've got a good friend in Houston who is also sort of one of those prolific researcher and writer types. And he wrote a pretty remarkable Facebook post about Houston as a three-part disaster, talking about many of the things that Sam mentioned, like, the fact that the city really only exists because it was trenched out. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a swamp to start with. But among the many things that he's pointed out is that the volunteers and first responders and local media have in the initial hours been like literally local media have been carrying out rescues in the initial hours that Texas Guard was finally activated, pretty late 21 hours ago, that there's not a lot of meaningful federal help on the ground right now, which is really interesting. And then he points out that there is a bonus disaster coming, which is that about 5 days after it all ends, then Houston will enter, quote, a mosquito hell like other.
I get it. Yeah.
And you heard Sam mention Tropical Storm Allison. Apparently, in the aftermath of Tropical Storm Allison, landing rates on exposed human arms topped 100 per minute.
Damn.
And all estimates show that this will be worse.
Great.
I don't even know why I had to bring that up. I just, that blew my mind.
Well, and here's the other part of this thing, right? Because this is a story on like 97,342 different levels. It's regulations. It's climate change, as Sam was sort of alluding to, but not really saying. It's a global thing because, oh, by the way, and this is like the American media myopic perspective, and I say that as a member of the media. There's a monsoon going on now in Southeast Asia, right? Bangladesh and Mumbai. There was a picture from the Mumbai airport on Twitter this morning where the airport is like up to the wheel wells of the airplanes, right? So there's like 1,000 different things that this story's all about, and not all of them are happening in Houston, Texas.
No, and it's really, it's about people and water in a large, to a large extent. I mean, the flooding in Asia, it's amazing. There's a story as of July on CNN World about Asia underwater. 137 million people's lives are being put at risk because there is such increased storm activity and flooding in places where people are moving for the first time. It is a climate change story, but it's not only that. It's a developing nation story, which is fascinating. It's also a federal budget story. I mean, also in July, the New York Times wrote about how everybody loves President Trump's choice for the FEMA head, but nobody likes the proposed huge funding cuts for that organization. And look, this guy is on the ground right now, looking around him thinking, should I really make massive cuts to FEMA to encourage states and cities to budget for their own preparedness?
Well, that's exactly it. And that's what's interesting, right? Just to get back to our normal, not normal thing, right? So it's completely normal for a Republican administration to say, well, let's cut the federal budget and let's trim down the need for the federal government to do a whole lot of stuff, right? I mean, that's normal. But then this happens and you're like, well, wait a minute. How do we look at that when 6 million people in the greater Houston area are under 19 feet of water?
And when there's, going to be ongoing national energy issues because of all of the industry that's placed there. I mean, there's so much, in the chaos theory way, like if a butterfly flaps its wings in Houston, the feds are going to have to pay for something.
Mm-hmm.
It's just
a note to.
Were you going to make a note to Chaos Theory self?
No, I was going to say note to self. Let's do a thing on Chaos Theory because I happen to think it's super cool.
I love it. I wrote my like senior high school thesis paper about Chaos Theory.
Why am I not surprised?
I loved it. I think I got it all wrong too because everybody does.
Why am I not surprised? Molly Wood, Chaos Theoretician.
At the end of the day, it is a human story. It's a planning and preparation and prevention story, and humans suck at that. And I think that's what you really heard Sam saying with all of that exhaustion in his voice, which is like, why can't we plan for this, especially when we know it's just going to get worse?
He was so tired, man. He was so tired.
Poor guy. He needed a hug.
Well, he has his dog. I'm just saying. Well,
he has his wife sitting next to him. I'm sure he's going to get a hug.
And his wife and his kids. I know. Now I come off like a heel.
Dog.
Oh, God. All right. I'm going to stop talking now.
Thank God he has a dog, though, because family is the worst.
Oh, man. All right. So, how about those credits? Let's pay some bills, huh?
With the launch of ChatGPT, Sam Altman and OpenAI reinvigorated our imaginations and fears of a world with artificial intelligence. While the company looked like a stunning success from the outside, a battle was brewing within on what the future of AI should be. Almost a year after launching ChatGPT, that battle erupted into a war when the company fired its charismatic CEO, Sam Altman. From Wondery, Business Wars is a podcast about the biggest corporate rivalries of all time. And in the newest season, host David Brown digs into the philosophical differences within OpenAI that culminated in Sam Altman's shocking firing, the chaos that followed, and what it means for the future and safety of AI in the modern world. Follow Business Wars on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more, Wondery means business.
Look, it was Harry Truman who said, if you want a friend in Washington, get a dog. That's all I'm saying. All right, so look.
I also find mine very comforting.
You have a dog? It's probably in your lap right now for crying out loud.
I booted him.
Did you really? Oh, you're harsh, man. All right, we have picked our next selection in the Make Me Smart book club. It is, ta-da, The Man on the High Castle by Philip K. Dick. You have plus or minus a month to get a copy. You can go to the library, you can get a Kindle, whatever you want to do. We're going to talk about it at the beginning of October. So I think technically you've got like 5.5 weeks or something like that.
And a couple of people at Marketplace have actually asked us about the book too. Yes, it is clearly a popular choice. I think it would be awesome if somehow the book club transcended this podcast and then became like a Marketplace bonding exercise. That would just be... we could start a Slack group.
I'm here at Marketplace World Headquarters, and you're way the hell up there in Oakland living remotely, and I knew nothing about the other Marketplace people. Nobody tells me anything around here.
I need some bonding.
Wow.
You should be on Slack more.
Get a dog. You need bonding? Get a dog. No, I'm sorry. I'm going to leave that one alone.
I had to boot the dog because right before this show, as I put in our Slack channel, the dog was standing up with his paws on my leg and a ball in his mouth, and I was like, I don't get it. Message unclear. I'm not following dog, shoved a toy full of treats and kicked him out. Okay, it is now time for what is quickly becoming known as the Bitcoin mailbox.
Yes.
Where do we mail a letter?
In the mailbox.
So we did Bitcoin on the show on the 8th of August. We have been getting questions and answers and comments and clarifications about Bitcoin and blockchain and all of that pretty much since then. Last week, Doug Brown wanted to know why, if Bitcoin is so reliable, how did Molly lose her Mt. Gox Bitcoins? Brandon Gottlob, who is becoming our Marketplace Bitcoin expert, wrote us back with some details. Here's what he said.
He wrote quite a lot of details. I will summarize a little bit. He said part of the problem was Mt. Gox had a lot of issues. Its main problem was stolen Bitcoin, so they can actually be stolen, partly because Mt. Gox managed a small number of wallets to process a large number of users' transactions with large numbers of Bitcoin moving in and out of those wallets daily. There is still mystery surrounding the whole situation, but hackers likely stole the private keys, so the encryption keys, of Mt. Gox wallets, which would give them full access to the Bitcoins in those wallets. I know I lost about most of you at that point. But so they broke some encryption or stole the keys to encryption, which allowed them to steal the actual Bitcoin. And then he says that, yes, the mechanics tying my user account to Bitcoin via Mt. Gox is totally separate from the actual blockchain.
Key
so the user accounts were managed by their own databases. And I think so. I think when I said it essentially just got disconnected, the account information from the Bitcoin, that seems to be roughly correct.
Yeah.
We should just get Brandon. Oh, he's amazing. And he said, thanks for taking my comments again. And someone please make sure Molly actually watches this season of Game of Thrones. So I want you all to know that I'm caught up.
Are you?
Right. I did
I'm
it.
Not, I'm not going to say anything because I got yelled at last time.
And to be honest, I finished, like, I think this is pretty good for me. I finished the season one day after everybody else.
That's like forever in internet time. Where have you been?
It was a long exile from the internet, let me just say. Right. But now I'm caught up and I don't know. It's fine.
All right. Well, so we're going to go out. We're going to go out not on a Game of Thrones bit here, but on a Molly Wood bit. Ready, begin.
Oh, yes. I have a little. So a little news. I've been a little bit in stealth mode this summer because I have been preparing for the relaunch and takeover of the Marketplace Tech Show. Starting on September 5th, I will be the new host of Marketplace Tech, which is a 4-minute weekday broadcast that may or may not air at a station near you. And if it doesn't, don't worry, because you'll get it in like 8-minute podcast form every day. And I'm super excited. I've been working with just like the amazing producer, Stephanie Hughes. She puts me to shame every day because she does so much work.
That's a good producer,
to
man.
Come up with a show that I think you guys are really going to like. I'm super. It's almost like the pure tech version of Make Me Smart. It's just like indulge curiosity on topics and people.
I'll go with that. That's a good distillation. And the key point there actually is if your station, if your local station, public radio wise, that is, doesn't take the 4-minute module, get the podcast.
Yeah, get the podcast. It's going to be good. You might want to get the podcast even if they do, because you'll get just like a little bit extra.
Yeah.
And I can't even wait for you guys to hear the first episode. It was a highlight of my professional life, this interview.
Really?
Yes, wow. Totally.
What am I, JoJo the dog face boy?
Well, I don't interview you.
You know, I said that to somebody once, and they went, woof.
Oh, that's good. Dang, I wish I'd thought of that.
My rundown says we're going to get some Molly music here. Are we getting some Molly Tech music?
Oh, yeah, we are.
Ooh.
That's my new gong. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Molly Wood.
Oh, wow. How very techy of you.
That's our new tunes. Isn't it dancey?
Did Jake write this? Is this Jake? Oh, Jake did the gong.
Jake finessed it into what you hear right now.
There you go.
Took some off-the-shelf elements. He added a dose of his own creativity and originality, and then you have this beautiful thing that makes you want to dance. Oh, yeah.
No dancing in my radio studio, but I guess it's your radio studio.
I'm pretty excited about the new theme.
So you can subscribe to that podcast, by the way, the Marketplace Tech Podcast, on Apple Podcasts or wherever you like. You can also subscribe to this particular podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you like. And hook us up.
Yeah, hook us up. Podcasts all over the place.
Podcast out. Make Me Smart is produced by Jenny Josephson, Emily Henderson, and senior producer Nancy Fargali. This week's program was engineered by Jake Gorski. The theme music to which you are listening now was composed by Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez.
The executive producer of Marketplace is Satara Nieves, and the senior vice president and general manager is Deborah Clark. And JoJo, the dog face boy, is our own Kai Ristoff.
Woof. Yeah, seriously, I'll tell you offline who that was. It won't make any sense to you, but it will resonate for some people here. Woof.
I like the little dog theme, the sort of running dog theme that we've had throughout the entire show.
That's right. I feel bad for Sam's dog, right? Hasn't been out of the house in 3 days.
That's an antsy dog right there.
Must have taken him out, because otherwise it just gets ugly inside with a dog for 3 days.
And teenagers. Woof.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.